I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Jack Reciter, host of Darknet Diaries. This is OPP.
God bless everybody, and welcome back to another episode of OPP, Other People's Podcasts, America's number one podcast discovery platform that highlights your favorite podcasters and the dope shows they created. I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. Our special guest this episode is Jack Reciter, host of the amazing podcast, Darknet Diaries. This podcast explores true stories of the dark side of the internet, where Jack Reciter takes you on a journey through a chilling world of hacking, data breaches, and cybercrime. In this episode, Jack chats with me about the dark side of the web, we get his podcaster's picks, and of course, we get into his dope show, Darknet Diaries. So, without further ado, allow me to introduce you to Jack Reciter.
Jack, what's going on, dog?
Hey, man. Thanks for having me here. I'm super excited about this.
Dude, it's a pleasure having you on OPP, man. You know, how's life going for you?
Super. I did not think I would ever be a professional podcaster, but man, in the last couple of years, my life has changed and this is where it is. And I love it. It's so much fun.
Dude, it's crazy that like we're living this generation. The next generation is going to be a group of people, a group of kids who want to be podcasters. And this entire generation, it didn't exist. So we're all kind of like transplant podcasters. We're doing something else in our career.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
How's it adjusting been for you?
Well, I've always wanted to do something creative on my own or, you know, on the internet or something. And so it's what I've always wanted. And so I'm overly ripe for this and super ready for it. So I'm adjusting just fine.
So I was obviously based on your podcast, I know that you come from the network security side and the technology side, which is something I am not well versed in at all. I'm like a music person. So I would love to ask you some questions to kind of get more of a story about your background, and how you got into network security.
Yeah. So, I mean, I took I got a degree in computers, and then it was just not sure because they teach you a little bit about everything, and didn't quite have a specialty, just a little bit. So I never really landed in a good computer job. But then I got a certificate in networking and started getting good at networking. You know, passing packets around and getting traffic to go here and there, that kind of thing. And so, I got good at that, and then I got a job watching a network to make sure it's up and stable. And then from there, I was able to learn that there was an opening as a security engineer and moved into that. And I spent 10 years doing network security engineering. So I was basically trying to keep the hackers out of the network. And it's a kind of a game of cat and mouse. And taking all this knowledge, like during that time, I was blogging a lot too. So I was learning how to like write really complex things as simple as possible. And I was doing that for like 10 years, right? So a lot of blogging and just getting used to like explaining things and teaching people things and stuff like that, I think really got me. And all that knowledge I had of my professional knowledge, combine it all together, I think it really gave me that, like, I'm ready to make a podcast about hacking kind of thing.
Tell me, what are some of the common things as normal consumers that we can do to protect ourselves online?
Well, I think the biggest thing is to update your software, right? So your phone, your applications, your operating system, you want to keep that on the latest update that's possible, because hackers are going to be exploiting things that are known. Like, that's the easiest thing is like, well, what's a known exploit? All this stuff that came out last year or the year before. But if you're updated and, you know, the software is fixed all that because they know about that vulnerability and they fixed it, then you're immune to all these problems, right? So that's the biggest thing. And I think the next thing you should do is have complex passwords, different passwords on every website you use. You don't want to reuse passwords. So maybe use something like a password manager, which can give you, you know, a really complicated password for every website that you log into. Because if somebody gets into one thing, you don't want them to be able to get in everything, right? So you want to definitely use different passwords on everything. And I think just those two things alone is going to make it a lot harder for anyone to get into your stuff. And the point is you want to make it as hard as possible for people to get into your thing. It's not going to be impossible, but you want to make it hurt for them.
For the everyday consumer of the internet, that's amazing advice. What about for people who are, on the business side of having, you know, cyber networks? What can they do to, you know, prevent hackers?
Well, I mean, there's a lot there, right? So again, you want to start with just making sure you're updated. You want to have antivirus running on a lot of your systems or some sort of endpoint protection and keep, because the users are going to be clicking on things that you don't know what they're doing. So you want to make sure that you've got something on each person's machine that's kind of protecting them from spreading anything. And then on your servers that you're public, especially publicly facing servers, you want to make sure that you have proper practices going on there, and you're not having your developers put glaring holes in things and, you know, making mistakes where a hacker can easily get into things. So you want to have, you know, educated developers making good decisions on what's exposed to the internet and you know, all that stuff, and then testing it as well. So you want to come through and do a vulnerability scan against everything that's a server, basically, and make sure everything is secure there. So it takes a lot of work, and especially as the network grows, sometimes there's thousands and thousands of servers. It can be constant work to try to keep it all secure and maybe impossible.
You're an expert in your field of network security, but Jack, like, what keeps you up at night as like an issue in this industry or in this field or in this world of network security?
Oh man, so many things. I think the growing surveillance and I feel like at some point, you know how we have like an oil spill or something, and it's just like all this oil is just dumped into the ocean, and it's like, okay, well, now we have to spend the next 5 or 10 years cleaning this up. I think that's the situation currently with our private information, and everything is just spilling out everywhere, and it's a catastrophe. It's a total catastrophe, and we're going to probably spend the next 10 or 20 years trying to clean up our private lives from the internet. And some people are born with it, like, oh yeah, when I was a baby, my mom was posting pictures all over the internet, and they're just used to this kind of just non-private life and surveillance being everywhere, with cameras pointing at us and trackers and cookies just collecting so much information on everything we do online. But I don't think that's going to sustain itself. I think there's going to be some serious problems with that over time, and we're going to learn that that was not a good decision, and to try to put that genie back in the bottle is going to take decades possibly, and I think that's a big concern of mine.
You know, ride with me on this one. When I was a kid, I was with my best friend, and we were walking through the streets of Richmond, Virginia, where I'm from. And his dad came and picked us up, and he's a police officer. And as he picks us up, and, you know, we're suburban kids, but we're in the city. And as a police officer, he's driving us through downtown. And what he sees of the city is completely different from what we see, because we're children or we're just regular civilians. And he's saying it over here, like, oh, there was someone who was shot over here, and that's the drug corner, or that's the prostitution corner, as we're driving through the streets. And I realized, wow, he sees a totally different reality than what we see. Does, from being in your line of work, do you kind of have more of a pessimistic attitude or fearful attitude about the internet? Do you still kind of see it with these googly eyes the way that a regular person would?
Yeah, I do. And it does worry me. I kind of have Cassandra syndrome sometimes, where I'm like, this is a big problem. Everyone needs to look at this. And like, nobody seems to be paying attention to things. Like one of the things I see sometimes is like kids swatting other kids, right? So they get mad at each other and playing video games, and they call the FBI and say, this person needs to be raided for some reason. And then the FBI go and raid their house or SWAT team. And so it's like, I mean, some kid has It's like that sometimes they raid the wrong house and people die, or sometimes they raid the right house and people die. And it's like, dude, people are dying because somebody's getting mad at each other on video games. And so there's like this, there's a lot of huge problems, and there's not like a security company trying to focus on solving problems like that. There's nobody looking at the problems that teenagers are facing and how they're hacking their schools or their friends or their girlfriends or anything like that. It's you know, a bigger business kind of you know, problem that they're trying to solve, and not really some of these things that just don't have the budget to look into it. And I don't even know how you would even try to solve something like that, but I just don't see effort putting into some of the things that need to be looked at some points, right? So I do get riled up on things like that, and I get riled up about government hacking each other and surveillance and this kind of thing as well. But yeah, I do see it as like, somebody should listen to me on this or something, but I don't know what to do.
You know, you brought up a very interesting point there. You know, I don't have children of my own, so, you know, I didn't have a lot of questions geared towards children. But what about for parents who are listening to this podcast today? Like, what can parents do to protect their children online?
Oh, it's hard. It's hard. You know, I think the first thing is just to educate yourself on what kind of dangers there are out there, and to understand technology, because your kids are going to be growing up with technology everywhere. And even if you take away all their things, they're still going to find their friends that have those things, and they're going to be logging in and doing things on their friends' devices. So it's better to adopt and embrace the technology, if you ask me, and to kind of lean into it, because you don't want to exclude your kids from what's going on in the world, which is technology. And it's kind of a necessary skill to have today, is to be able to navigate technology and be able to use computers and phones and everything. So you can't really take it all away, because then they don't get it. So you kind of have to give it to them, but then also be aware of what's going on. So, I mean, the best thing is just to be good at technology yourself, in order to teach your kids like good hygiene and proper usage of how to use technology responsibly.
Jack, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to do your podcast, Darknet Diaries.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow wherever you are. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Jack, tell me, how did you first discover the medium of podcasting?
Oh, man, it was a long time ago. It was probably like 2003 or 5 or something. I got my first iPod. I think it was a Generation 3 iPod. And I was like, well, I guess I got to try putting podcasts on here. And it was such a pain in the neck, because you had to get a special cable and download the podcast to iTunes and then transfer from iTunes to your podcast. It was not easy to play. But I just tried a few, and I just didn't like any of them. It was just not my style. I couldn't find the ones that I liked. It was real new at the time, too. So people were like kind of clumsy and tripping on each other, and nobody really knew how to do it. And so I kind of gave it up until Serial came around. And then I started listening to Serial, and I was like, wow, what? This is amazing. What else is there out here? So, but I think during all that, I was listening to NPR on the radio, right? So I was listening to This American Life was my favorite. And then there was Radio Lab and Science Friday. And I was like, there's some really good audio here. And especially This American Life had, you know, I had those driveway moments where I was sitting in my car after arriving to where I needed to go and just waiting for the story to end without getting out. I realized the power of audio when it can do that to me, when it can affect me in that way, where I just want to sit in the car and listen to this story for like 10 more minutes. And so I think that had a big influence on me as I was listening to more audio and getting into podcasts after that.
Did you know from listening to Serial and This American Life and this early era of podcasting that you would want to become a podcaster yourself?
No, it was the farthest thing from my mind. I did not think, I mean, when I was in high school, I thought maybe I could be a radio DJ, but I practiced a little, but I didn't ever think it was going to happen. I don't know. I didn't have anything to say. I didn't have the skills. Like, there was just no way that I could ever do that. So yeah, I just didn't think it was for me. And still, when I had the idea, I didn't think I could do it, because those people who make This American Life, there's like 20 names in the credits. Like, there's no way one person can do all this. So that was kind of what really just made me think I could never do it.
For folks who are listening to the podcast, give me the elevator pitch for Darknet Diaries.
Yeah, the 9-word description is true stories from the dark side of the internet. So I'm taking cybercrime and mashing it into true crime, right? So it's like this hacker did this hack, and this is what everything that happened. So I'm doing it with a lot of rich audio and interviews, and I try to interview the hacker or the person who got hacked or something who was related to it, not an expert, but more of the person who was there. And then I put a lot of, you know, music behind it as well. So it's, you know, influenced a lot by This American Life. If you're familiar with that show, it sounds similar to that, but specifically about hacking.
Tell me the origin story of how you decided to make this podcast come together.
Well, again, you know, listening to This American Life, I was like, and Serial, I was looking around for a podcast that specifically dove into cybercrime, and I couldn't find it. I couldn't. And I listened to like probably a dozen or two or three dozen security podcasts, but they're all about security news or just interviews on security experts and stuff like that. And so I was like, where is this podcast? Is there there's such drama in cybercrime? I want a show specifically about cybercrime. And so I gave up trying to find it and decided maybe I can make it myself. Maybe I have to make it myself, because I wanted to hear it so bad. I was really into podcasts at the time. I was listening to podcasts like every single day. And I'm like, I want to hear this show. So it was one of those just scratch my own itch kind of things.
I often wonder, you know, I say this about podcasts all the time. The beautiful thing about them is that, you know, it's an opportunity to either rebrand yourself or enhance the brand you've already created for yourself. How has this show helped your career, you know, being that you come from a background of, you know, cybersecurity?
So I was able to throw my resume out. Like, there's no need for it anymore, because people, I mean, at this point, I'm 2 years into this, and there's 200,000 listeners of the show. And a lot of them are in the security field, where I spent, you know, I went to university to do, and I spent 10 years in that field. So it's like, that's my whole profession. I put everything into security. And now a huge part of the people who listen to my show are security professionals. And they're anywhere from the owner of the company all the way down to the receptionist, right? So they're all over the place in that security field. And like, if I ever needed anything, or if I wanted to do consulting work, or am I looking for a job or something, people have listened to 57 episodes. They know what I know. They're familiar with my knowledge. And, you know, total strangers get on LinkedIn and they start, verifying that I know these skills, right? Like, people I don't know, but because they've heard me talk about it in such a knowledgeable way, they know I know it. So, you know, I would just have to simply say, hey, I'm looking for a job and I don't want a podcast anymore. And I'm sure I would get tons of emails without having to look for a job at all, right? And I could write whatever it is I want, like, oh, I want to work from home, or I, you know, I'm in the city or whatever it is. And I'm sure I would get tons of people, because I have the audience to tell. And they know who I am. And there's this connection. There's this real intimate connection in podcasting. You get to know the person that you're listening to over time. And you feel connected to them. So I think, yeah, like, maybe I would need the resume as I'm actually going through the job, but not to, like, get my foot in the door anymore, right? So that, I think, has been amazing, that I've just become, like, a known figure in the space.
You know, you're over 2 years into this amazing podcast. Has there been a story in particularly that you've covered that has struck more of an emotional chord with you?
I think I keep trying to one-up myself on all these stories, right? And so I dig deeper and I go deeper and I find things that I never heard of or saw before in my professional career, and things come up. And so there was this one where there was a 17-year-old kid who... he was 15 or 16, but he hacked his school and got in a lot of trouble. And you hear like, oh, a hacker did this and, you know, took down the school's website or something. And all these images come into your mind already, right? Like, okay, well, was he at home wearing a hoodie in his mom's basement, or whatever, you know, what was it? And what, and why did it happen and all these things. But, you know, I interviewed him and we heard about all the reasons that it happened and how it happened and why and where. Like, it was in fifth period class on a tablet. It was in the back of the class. The teacher was not paying attention when he hacked into the whole school's website. Like, it's just, I don't know. It made you think, like, wow, this is a dangerous thing. And there's these people who just don't have any sort of filter on that. That's bad. I shouldn't do that. They just go. And it's hard to hear because it's almost cringy of like, oh, it's such a dumb idea. But then it's true. And this is what happened. And, you know, they get caught for this reason and goes to court and has this fallout and all these things. And it was just a really weird, roller coaster of, I don't know how to solve this problem kind of thing. Because you asked me at the beginning, hey, what's the best thing for this and that? Man, I don't know what to tell this 15-year-old. Like, wait 3 more years and then get a job when you're 18. Like, 3 years of waiting when you're 15 is, like, forever. Especially when you're just so hungry to, like, do something in tech and you're bored out of your mind in school. It was a wild story that I just was flabbergasted by.
You know, Jack, what do you want listeners to walk away with after listening to an episode of Darknet Diaries?
I think one of my biggest motives of making the show is to teach more people more things. So, I kind of said, like, you get these images in your head of what a hacker is when you just hear some story, but I really lean into it. And we go into that one story for an hour, and you come out of it knowing so much more, but really not sure what side to be on anymore. Did the hacker do the right thing? Or, you know, did they deserve it? Or, you know, like, you, the more you know about something, sometimes the harder it is to know which side is right, because you weigh it all and you just still don't know. And so you learn about hacking and how computers and technology runs our world and how, you know, how people got in. Like, we'll go through each keystroke sometimes and say, hey, tell us what exactly it was. And, you know, it's amazing how simple it is. You know, sometimes you just find somebody's password on a napkin and you just grab it. And that was it. That's the whole hack. Like, what? Like, how can you secure that? Like, don't write your password. Like, it's so weird. All the different reasons why people hack and ways they hack. So I think it's just a very educational process to hear, about the technology and how it works in our world today.
So, Jack, we've come to a point called our podcaster's picks. Now, this is when I asked the special guest of this episode to provide me with 3 of their favorite podcasts that they enjoy that we should be listening to. So, Jack, give me some podcasts. Give me 3 podcasts that you enjoy and describe them to the audience.
Okay. So I think the one I keep coming back to is one of my favorites is Revisionist History by Malcolm Gladwell. And this one is really wild because Malcolm kind of has, it's almost like a philosophical, like, let's think about this problem in a new way, or let's turn everything on its ear and look at it in a totally different way. And you come out of it and think, like, there was this one episode about country music. I don't like country music, but I came out of the episode loving country music, right? Like, it's so, you, if you look into it just with the right eyes, you can really appreciate it. And so I get, my mind is transformed when I listen to Revisionist History. Another one is called Have You Heard Georgia's Podcast? And I wonder, Corey, have you heard this one?
No, I have not.
Have You Heard Georgia's Podcast is pretty phenomenal. It's a work of art, and it's rich in production, like This American Life, but it goes that extra mile. And George is he raps and he's poetic. It's George the poet who makes this one, and it's just so amazing because the way he raps and does his poetry through the show, but then with the interviews that he does and with the people that he talks to, it's like all rhyming and there's so much music involved, and it's just fantastic show. And so that one I'm just really blown away by. Like, I listen to one and then I kind of stop and say, whoa, what did I hear? Like, it's not one of those binging things. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. Let me process this for a while. So that one is really cool. And then there was one I was just listening to recently called Hunting Warhead which is about a investigation into some crimes that went on in the dark net. I'll just say that. And it's interesting to see how they tracked this person down and found them and how they got arrested and that sort of thing. That's right up my alley, right? So that's kind of one why I really like that, is because how do you get discovered when you're trying so hard to be hidden online? And that's what they do. There's a hacker named Warhead. Well, I don't know if he's a hacker, but he committed some serious crimes on the darknet named Warhead, and they hunt him down. And it's a wild story.
Wow. And Jack, before we get out of here, why do you podcast, brother?
Oh, man. I love the feeling of doing something creative and then to have someone appreciate it in a way that's like impactful to them. And there's just that feeling when somebody just says, thank you for making what you make. It's changed me in this way or that way. Like, people say they've changed their career or something based on what I've said. And it's just so profound to hear that I'm influencing and teaching people and changing lives. Like, there's nothing that is similar to that. That feeling of just doing something positive in the world is just fantastic. So that's the biggest reason, I think.
Thank you all so much for tuning in to another episode of OPP, and to our special guest, Jack Reisider. Be sure to check out his amazing podcast, Darknet Diaries, on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. This episode is produced by Justin Richards. Music for this episode is produced by Richie Quake. Are you down with OPP? If so, be sure to check out OPP.news for the latest in podcast news and releases. And while you're still listening, how about giving me a 5-star rating and leaving me a comment in the Apple app? It'll truly mean a lot. Well, I'm your host, Corey Cambridge. God bless everybody. Till next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.